Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome in to the DNVR Rockies podcast presented by Strava Craft Comp. Oh, I don't think I'm on. I keep doing that. Okay. I keep unplugging the microphone right as I start. Let's try that again. Hello, everyone coming in on the live. Take two. Welcome in to the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Remember to use that promo code DNVR20 because you'll get 20% off your entire purchase of that CBD-infused and deliciously rich and potentially life-altering Strava Craft Coffee. I am your host, Drew Kreisman. I am the managing editor of DNVR Rockies. Patrick Lyons, beat writer, will be along shortly to join us for this conversation of a 2-1 loss to the Houston Astros. Two in a row that were coin flip games where the Colorado Rockies got excellent starting pitching in the first game, obviously, from Kyle Freeland. Here in this one from Antonio Senzatella, where again, two games in a row, the strike zone became a part of the conversation, especially with a key call that went against Trevor Story there late. And then the new extra innings rule coming into play majorly in this one. Looks like Patrick is all ready to join us here. So, Patrick, another tough one to take. The Rockies have lost 7 of their last 9. These coin flip games, as I started calling them, seem to be going not 50-50 for or against the Colorado Rockies, but 80-20, at least in the last couple of weeks here. Rachel wants to know, time to panic?
I don't think so, not yet. These games, as you said, have been close coin flips, to use your phrase, but the law of averages say, well, they're going to be 50-50. We know a third of the season, you're going to win those games, a third you're going to lose, and these third right here in the middle, kind of these coin flip games, are really where a bulk of their season is going to be made up. Now, some of those are just games you're going to lose. You may have even, going into this week, put an L right on Tuesday because you saw Zach Greinke was going, and you go, yeah, all right, that's going to be a loss. Until Antonio Senzatella goes out and matches him in almost every way. Had one less strikeout. Otherwise, identical pitching lines. Same thing for a guy like Lance Lynn, who doesn't get quite enough love. So,
right,
you know, the Rockies have been up against it once in a while, and you can't expect them to go out and defeat some of those teams. But they've been competitive along the way. It's really those days in between. It's Monday's ball game with Kyle Freeland on the hill and a guy like, you know, Brandon Belak, who doesn't have quite the same pedigree, or, you know, losing that final game in Seattle. And so those are the games maybe that are more important. This one, you learn a little something about strategy when it comes to these extra inning games, and you chalk it up to the team with a little bit more experience as far as getting the job done.
You know, it's funny you mentioned those, Patrick. When Tapia drove in the first run of the game, I was ready to come on here and talk about this being the opposite of those, this being an inverse of exactly the games you just listed where they stole one because you don't expect them. And I did say on yesterday's podcast that, believe it or not, this is going to be a pitcher's duel and a total toss-up between Antonio Senzatella and Zach Greinke, which if you'd have said that a year ago, people would have called you nutso for suggesting that Senzatella versus Greinke is a toss-up. And that's exactly what it was. They pitched each other to a stalemate. You really cannot argue, I think, that either guy pitched the better or worse game. It was, for fans of two completely different styles of pitching, You could teach this in schools. You could take this game, and if you top out at 88 in high school, and but you know you've got a lot of wicked movement, and you think you can work the edges, and you think you're smart, and you think you know what the other guy is expecting, and you can work to his weaknesses or to your strengths. Watch Zach Greinke and take some notes, because the guy is making a borderline Hall of Fame career out of doing that, and he did it extraordinarily well today. Where Antonio Senzatella, if you're like, if you think you've got 97 in you and you can bring 95 with relative ease, and now you've got these big wipeout slider and curveball pitches and this developing changeup that you're starting to play with like it's a toy you discovered at Christmas time, all of a sudden Antonio Senzatella allows 3 weak ass singles in 8 innings of otherwise dominant baseball to be your king of the game. Remember to use that promo code DNVR at DraftKings Sportsbook. But boy, oh boy, Patrick, what a performance from Antonio Senzatella. They keep getting outings like that out of him. This team's going to be just fine.
Yeah, he, you know, again, we're talking about going toe-to-toe with Greinke, who I think now at this point he is a Hall of Famer. He still has maybe a little more tidying up to do, throw a couple more, you know, wins, strikeouts, you know, those counting stats, things.
Say, I got to go look. Yeah.
But I think he's there, especially just from this generation. Him in every way. After that double play that Arenado hit into, again, Greinke fielding his position. There's a reason why he's won 6 gold gloves at the pitcher spot, very akin to what a guy like Greg Maddux did for many years, although he won about 3 times as many during his career. But again, going toe-to-toe like that, from that point on, Greinke retired every batter. So 14 straight to end his 8 innings. Yep. Well, Antonio Senzatella retired 13 out of 14. So again, any way you cut it, you've got an ace and what I believe is a Hall of Famer going out and shoving 8 innings. And you say, well, all right, certainly there's no way Senzatella can match him. And he absolutely did. And when he got that final out, that strikeout on pitch 170, just slapped that mitt, and you had to feel really good for a guy who's making the case that, hey, you know what? Maybe he does have the upside of a number 2 starter.
Yeah. Just real quickly, I know it's the Rockies podcast or whatever, but I just realized that I may actually be gaining my ability to vote for the Hall of Fame right around the time that Zach Greinke becomes eligible. He's got 206 wins and 123 losses. He's pitched 2,893.1 innings with a career ERA of 3.35. The FIP right there, remarkably consistent at 3.37. That might as well be identical. And the XFIP, again, might as well be identical, 3.51. Patrick, he's got a FWAR from Fangraphs of 61.3 in his career. So like you said, those are that's a Hall of Famer. And maybe he's got a pitch a couple more years to get some of those counting stats that guys like. Where were the strikeouts really quick?
Because he's like 2640, something like that. Yeah. So he's going to approach 3,000. He might get that. I think
nailed only, it, 2640.
I think only Justin Verlander is the only other guy that has 200 wins that's active right now. And, you know, if you open up a newspaper, Justin Verlander isn't actually active. So Zach Greinke is currently the leader coming out of the clubhouse in that category of wins. So, you know, again, Baseball Reference does a good job of kind of comparing. They use a system called JAWS, created by Jay Jaffe of Fangraphs. And according to that system, which does a fantastic job and is kind of one of those main elements for how Larry Walker got into the Hall of Fame, people realizing, well, now hold up. Let's really crunch these numbers and look, because the counting stats aren't really there for Walker because of his injuries. But let's look at those other, you know, details and facets of his game. That's what helped get Larry Walker in was JAWS. And according to JAWS, Zach Greinke is currently the 36th best pitcher of all time. He's actually right behind Verlander at 33, just ahead of Clayton Kershaw at 37. And with possibly a few more good years, could pass the likes of, starting at number 31, Nolan Ryan, Tom Glavine, 30, Mike Mussina, and Curt Schilling. So he's right there. Whether you think of him as being dominant or not, he's dominant.
And to bring it back to your guy, those of you listening to this, either on the podcast later on or live on the YouTube. Hopefully everyone's subscribing to that so you don't miss these post games almost immediately after the games are final. The point is to say that Antonio Senzatela matched him in every way out there in the game. Well, in his own way, because he doesn't pitch in the same style as we talked about earlier, but was just as good at flummoxing a lineup full of guys who've got all-stars and silver sluggers and a lot of them a World Series championship, however we may all feel about that, on their mantle place. And so I don't think they all get a piece of the World Series. I don't think it works quite like that. But still, you understand what we're saying here. It was a remarkable performance from Senzatela. And that really does have to be the biggest headline moving forward. I see a lot of people saying, you know, a little too much, a little too late again, saying this loss crushes my soul. I hate the extra innings rule. We'll get to that in a minute.
Did you say that after Tapia's hit? Because I wasn't.
Right.
I was like,
right.
Okay, this is a nice little rule. Raimel Tapia, how do you do?
Sam coming in with, why am I a Rockies fan? That was no fun. But you're a Rockies fan because these always feel like uphill battles. And when you win them, it's that much more sweet. And they were that close today. Again, from this kid who came in as a 25-year-old who, you know, after a year where I think he had like a 6.57 ERA a year ago. And I think a lot of Rockies fans wouldn't have blinked or thought second if Senzatela had been cut, which was never in the cards. You know what I mean? Like that was never the Rockies believed in him as much as I did, if not more. But still, if he had shown up and not been on the roster, they just kind of traded him for cash or something. I don't think too many Rockies fans would have been in an outrage over the loss of Antonio Senzatela. And for him to go out there and do what he did today and match up with Greinke, with good Greinke, with on his game Greinke, and force it basically to become a coin flip decided by the bullpens and, in this case, that extra innings rule and a little bit of the luck of the draw, you know, if that last liner is a little bit one way or the other, it's an easy out, and Bud Black looks like a genius for bringing the five infielders in, and, you know, you never know if you still get out of it from there, but tough one, man, but yeah, you gotta, in fact, I'll go ahead and crack open this Breck Brew. Not the
no
Avalanche Amber. Yeah,
no
right?
No sound effects. That was some just great Foley work. Nice job. And I don't mean Mick.
Ooh.
That was some excellent job there.
Darn it. I was going to say, I'll throw myself off the top of the Hell in a Cell in just a minute. But before that, I got to drink this Avalanche Amber because it's tasty and it celebrates a team that's actually winning right now. Oh, brutal. But no, it's really good beer. You know, one of my favorite places to drink it is down at the DNVR bar, but the best place to get it is from the farmhouse. You call 303-803-1380 from noon to 8 p.m. for pickup just for pickup. Use that code DNVR for $5. You can save off of the food and the beer, both of them at the same time. Really, really good stuff from the farmhouse. And you can toast this one to Antonio Senzatela.
Yeah, there's a reason why at 22 years old he made an opening day roster.
Right.
And you're starting to see that now. You know, there was something I included in the game recap for anyone who's subscribing. You can go ahead and look at that. It was one of those ordeals where it could go either way. Hey, this was one of those great Rockies wins where they came through late. Or, this was gut-wrenching, and unfortunately it was gut-wrenching. But one of the interesting statistics that was in there was basically how Antonio Senzatela has been one of the best, you know, ground ball pitchers in the game since his debut in 2017. He has a 50% ground ball rate that ranks fifth in the National League. And, you know, this is a guy who pitches at Coors Field, too, where, you know, the modus operandi is to get underneath a ball and, you know, the altitude and will do the rest for you. And yet he's been so successful with those ground balls. And you finally begin to see what he's doing right now with these quality starts. And now he's approaching some rarefied air. He has a lot further to go to touch on what Ubaldo Jimenez did in 2010. But for how he started this season with consecutive quality starts, you know, going 3-0, he's very much kind of doing those things statistically and I think to a degree on the field as well. Maybe not striking out guys at the same rate as Ubaldo, but he's certainly making that case to say, I might be the number four starter, but go ahead and check your history books because I'm trying to do some real big things this year.
Well, and he's gone from a four strikeout a game guy to a six or seven strikeout a game guy, and that's huge. He's, no, he's not Ubaldo with the nine, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, like he's really, wow, he has made himself into a remarkable major league pitcher, and it's showing off so far this season. Melissa coming in saying, should the runners on second base count toward the pitcher's ERA when they score on extras? As I learned today, I wasn't sure about this, but they do not. Which I think is fair, but it does create a very odd statistical reality. Patrick, do you know, because Story scored, right, a run there. Does that count toward our bet? He gets a run scored, I would imagine, still.
It's still a run, yes. Everything right. that happens in extra innings counts. The only workaround that they've done is for pitcher stats, because you're right, that wouldn't be fair. Right. So it's almost
Which
viewed
is kind
as an inherited
of the point
runner.
Of why the system
yeah they're treating it almost yeah. as if it was an error or an inherited runner, so yeah right. that wouldn't go against. Now that being said, when you come up with a guy on second base, you're doing things a little bit differently, and then you give up that second run again, that goes against you. But if that first guy on second base, I don't know if we're calling it the ghost runner or the designated runner, but if that guy was never there, you might have had a much easier inning and not given up an earned run, as yeah. it were. You know, the guys on second base, you might give up two runs, so that's going to be one earned run on your record. But Almonte did a good job keeping that down. Diaz was kind of in a no-win situation, a good job on the sacrifice bunt, the intentional walk. And he was kind of stuck there a little bit. I don't put too much of it on him.
Yeah, it's tough, too, in that point. Tanner coming and asking, I know that you're rightfully a fan of the Rockies hitters working the count, but Hampson shouldn't have taken so many pitches in his extra innings AB. That's a tough spot that he's in there for sure. I know what you're saying. A strikeout there is really, really tough. But against a guy who's got such a big, wicked curveball that he was throwing that Scrub was bringing out there, he's in a tough place there. I don't know. It's easy to second guess at that point, and you got to try to put the ball in play one way or another. But you can be a little bit more aggressive in that situation. But with the way Scrub was throwing that curveball off the plate a lot, I didn't mind the patience, but it did back him up a little bit, and you saw he wasn't ready for the fastball that got him.
Yeah, the result obviously was disappointing because Walters did his job, moves the runners over, and you go, wow, all right, this might be a multiple run inning. Then again, yeah, four straight knuckle curves by Scrub, who started out pitching like one, but in the end, he was not a Scrub after all. And yeah, that one was a big one. But I think the turning point, and you might have even led off to this, was the 2-1 pitch to Trevor Story in that next at bat. That was, I think, the moment of the game, maybe even more so than the defining one of Straw's walk-off hit in the 11th.
Yeah, so I spent so much time talking about Rob Drake yesterday, and by the way, totally slipped my mind that was an umpire I had already written an article suggesting he should have lost his job in the offseason because of off-the-field nonsense that showed a lack of judgment and temperament, which he again showed in game one of this series by instigating with Kyle Freeland and then calling what were clearly, and I saw on Twitter, like pretty much everyone was like, those were clearly vindictive strike calls against Daniel Murphy or the ball against Kyle Freeland. But anyway, I didn't feel like any of that was going on out there today, that any of it, no, nothing got personal. The strike zone was wide all day. It did benefit Zach Greinke quite a bit more, but it benefited Antonio Senzatella a couple of times. But the call, and I'll do what I did yesterday. I'll go ahead and I'll share my screen here on the Baseball Savant page and bring it up one more time, because the call you're talking about against Trevor Story, this is egregious, this call here. This is, if you're looking at that, that's two, maybe three baseball lengths off of the plate not even close. It dramatically altered the nature of that at-bat with two runners on for the Rockies' best hitter that should have gone into a 3-1 count. The next pitch was a curveball just on the outside edge that if you're in a 3-1 count, you just let that thing go and you let the umpire call it a strike or not. You live to see if he can throw another perfect pitch, but in the spot that Story was now in a 2-2 count instead of a 3-1 count, he had to take a very defensive swing against it and basically took the bat out of his hands in the most important at-bat of the game for the Rockies. The most important call of the game was egregiously bad.
Yeah, when he stepped to the plate, my instinct was to say that he was going to hit a double in that spot because he's been having a lot of, you know, memorable moments in Texas. He thrives there, you know, in his home state in many ways. And it just seemed fitting that, again, with Tapia coming through in the 10th to score that run after everything Senzatela had done, this is like a textbook game for Colorado to come away with the victory. And who better to do that than one of the, you know, the heart of their team, you know what I mean? So
right,
do for that double. And then, yeah, the 2-1 pitch goes the way it does. And instead of 3-1, it's 2-2. And totally changed the complexity of the game. Story took it in stride with grace, you know, stepped out, you know, right before the next pitch came in. But that was kind of the damning one. If you go and look, I don't know the batting averages off the top of my head, but it's markedly different between a 3-1 yes. count and a 2-2 yes. count. It could even be as close as 100 points. And
I'm if you're sure talking it's about more,
a,
yeah.
Yeah, if you're talking about a star player like Trevor Story, again, you know, that could be, again, if you're looking at OPS, you know, what are you doing in that hit? And for Story, he's hitting extra bases. And, again, those two runs could have been absolutely everything. You change your approach in the bottom of the 11th inning because you've got a run to give up. And then now you're not loading the bases, bringing Chris Owings in to play as a fifth infielder. And, you know, the rest is history. So that was, unfortunately, a pivotal moment that you've got back-to-back games here. You know, two games and ultimately 24 hours that – in many ways was decided by the umpiring. Now, make no two ways about it, Rockies have to win those games. They lost those games, period. When you're going back and you're reviewing those things and you have to talk about the storylines, you have to talk about the umpiring a little bit, and that's just unfortunate.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad you said that because that's what I tried to say last night. It's like, look, it'd be great to never talk about this stuff. I don't ever want to talk about it ever again. And we hadn't yet all year, as much as I maybe mentioned one or two here or there, but I certainly hadn't spent 10 minutes or as long as we did just now talking about this call because to the point this year, maybe I send a tweet here that go, Blue, you missed that one. But it doesn't become a story. And now 2 days in a row, it has become a story. And that's really unfortunate. And it's also unfortunate that we'll probably not hear anything. You know, here, Mark just writing in on Twitter, why is the umpiring this season so bad? I feel like almost every game I have followed has really bad calls, and even announcers are commenting on it during broadcasts. And, you know, we've talked about how there are more ball players out there making errors and, you know, strikeouts are up. And I think a lot of this has to do with the weirdness of the season and the no fans and the long layoff and the not a normal spring training and all of those things that we've talked about. And I think that that's impacting the umpires as well, which is just another great argument in favor of electronic strike zones because they don't need a spring training to get ready to go. But
the summer camp obviously was challenging for everyone involved. And although we're sitting here in mid to late August, players aren't playing quite like it. It's still early in the season for them. But for the umpires, where did they go? You know, the players had inter-squad games, right? You had 50 to 60 guys in camps that you can play games against. Where are umpires going? Now, granted, once those inter-squad games started up at Coors Field, you did see some umpires come down and do those games, but they have gotten much less reps, I think, than what they're typically used to than the players. So, you know, that's certainly a large factor, and you know, there's nothing you can do about it. Hopefully those guys get in mid-season form by the playoffs, and if Angel Hernandez is doing the playoffs, that midseason form is going to be something fun to watch.
Boy, oh boy. And, you know, some people were asking last night, and I've seen a little bit of it today, you know, what about just the the putrid offense. They're not scoring runs. But again, I can only take them to task so much. I've got to keep it as grounded in the facts as possible. And some of the facts were, one, Zach Greinke is a Hall of Fame pitcher, as we laid out, and he pitched a very good game. And two, Rockies also hit the ball hard several times again and just could not get the BABIP luck out there. I said yesterday, they got to stop hitting the ball to center field. Go to left or right. That's where you get hits here. But again, center field just crushed them out there. Trevor Story hit the ball hard three times, 98.8. So 99 miles an hour, 98 miles an hour, and 102 miles an hour. No hits on the day. Charlie Blackmon had one base hit. It was a soft base hit, but he had that 102-mile-an-hour line drive to lead off the first bit of extras with Trevor Story there. But it was to center field. If that's in the gap a little bit one way, expected batting average on that hit, Patrick, 820.
That's impressive. Yeah.
But
and conversely,
Straw, that dude runs stuff down in center field, I will say.
Well, yeah, bringing up Straw, conversely, he was the hero of the game there for Houston, went 2 for 5, no hard hit balls. So again, you got legs like that underneath you, you're going to make things happen.
Right. Daniel Murphy had a scorcher that went right at a guy at 96 miles an hour. Tapia obviously hit the ball hard and got a run for it. Nolan Arenado had a hard hit ball in the day. Yeah, the bottom part of the lineup continues to struggle a little bit. Ryan McMahon with the 3-strikeout day. Sam Hilliard getting in there as a late addition and striking out a couple times, but did draw a walk late. So, but again, it's, you can only take the offense to task so much in a game like this, especially when you look over at the other side and go, well, the Houston Astros have a lot of talented hitters, and they weren't exactly pouring on the hits and runs out there today either. It was good pitching, and a wide strike zone is going to lead to a low-scoring game just about every time, and that's what happened out there today.
I think the real snag of the offense right now, whether you like to admit it or not, is Nolan Arenado. And, you know, Buddy talked about it this morning that he's been pressing. And he hasn't been coming through when he's needed to. And you saw him in that one at-bat where he
was
real
bad.
Jumpy. Just didn't look – he looked comfortable on his face, but his body language told a completely different story.
Yep.
And, again, when Trevor is going out and, you know, homering as frequently as he's been, and he's got 7 on the year – and Charlie Blackman's hitting 500, you can go without your number 4 hitter being as productive as he typically is. But now you're seeing the effects of that, where Nolan has had numerous opportunities and he's just hasn't been coming through. And I don't know what that block is for him, you know, mentally or emotionally, whatever it is. But he's really been, I think, that key piece for why these close games have been coming up. And they're, 2-6 during that stretch. So
yeah.
It's unfortunate to have to say, because typically that really hasn't been the story, where even when he's been in a slump, you go, he's been in a slump. That happens. Charlie, Trevor picks him up for you know, longer periods at a time. But with this shortened season, it makes a really bad stretch like this of a week, you know, magnifies it all even more. And maybe that's where all that pressing is coming from. Knowing, you know, mathematically each game is worth 3 times as much. So if I'm struggling for 3 games straight, that's a week and a half. And
yeah.
Now game 4 is only game 4, but to him he's maybe thinking, shoot, now this is going on 2 weeks if I don't get a big hit here. And you see him swinging at a ball up and out of the zone like he did today.
Well, he's not going to get a $35 million contract from a different team if he keeps hitting like this, Patrick. I'll put it that way. How about that?
Fair.
All the questions about whether or not Nolan's going to take his opt out and go somewhere else and do the thing. How about if, you know, you're 100% right, and that has to be brought up because he's not getting it done right now. And that Raimel Tapia had a far more under control at bat in a key situation late than did Nolan Arenado is very head scratching in both ways, really. Actually, Tapia has always been really good in the clutch, and he did an extraordinary job there. I was kind of shocked that they couldn't tell that after rolling a few over to second base, Tapia had taken the approach that he was going to hit the ball in the air. You saw in the first pitch, he thought it was a fastball low, it was a changeup, but he went down and tried to golf it. He was not going to roll over and hit the ball to second. So I thought, okay, fastball up and in, because there's no way with the approach Tapia went up there with, he's going to cover that pitch. But they threw him a slider low, figuring maybe he'll chase it again if they just get it low. But it hung a tiny little bit, and Tapia went, I am getting the barrel to this. And it that's his contact approach. Almost won the Rockies a ball game. Almost bailed out Nolan Arenado for not being able to get a runner in from third with less than two away. So really solid approach there for him. One of the nice stories of this losing stretch for the Rockies and their offense.
Yeah, and it's the situation that he was in, not so much the fact that, hey, there's a guy on third base, you have an opportunity to drive him in. It was the fact that they chose. The Astros said, no, that's okay, Daniel Murphy. We'll give you first base. Right. Let's take this kid from the Dominican Republic, 26 years old. We saw what he did in his earlier at-bats. He's not going to be able to adjust. We've got this one. This is the matchup that we want. And he said, oh, you want me? You want a piece of this? Yeah. And he went out and he delivered. So it was particularly the context of which he had come through that was so huge that you said, wow, this is how the story should be written. With Senzatella going eight innings, matching Zach Greinke, going toe-to-toe against a team that had been in the World Series two out of the last 3 years. Notice I didn't say won the World Series, but was there for two of the last 3 years.
They were certainly there.
And then Tapia comes in and finishes the job. Like, that was how the story should have been. And it's very unfortunate that it's not going that way, because it really seemed that was the story the first 2 weeks, is everything was going their way. And I wouldn't say now everything is not going their way, but there's enough that isn't going their way.
Certainly just, in Houston, yeah. Certainly these last two games we talked about, and that's again where I try to make those distinctions, because it's really important that we draw a line between when the Rockies lose and there's a little bit of bad luck involved and there's a little bit of things that are outside their control, whether it's the umpiring or whatever it may be, bad hit luck, versus when we take them to task for that final game in Seattle that they blew, that they lost, that they messed up. When we go over their bad approach against Kyle Gibson, game two against the Rangers, bad offensive approach. You cannot do that. These two games in Houston, when searching for objective things to criticize about how the Rockies approached and played the game, I feel like there's honestly a very limited number of things to point to. You've got to keep playing this brand of baseball, and this is kind of where I finished last night with Jesse, and so I'll get your thoughts on it as well, Patrick. We've talked a lot about how, you know, 2017 and 2018 looked certain ways, and then 2019 had this other feel about it, right? And for some of the ugly losses, the Wade Davis blown save, and maybe that game where they gave up eight runs to the Diamondbacks in the eighth inning, those felt like 2019 losses, which make you go, oh, right? These two losses to the Astros, to me, felt like 2017 and 2018 losses. One run late to a team who's really good, a lot of good players, could have gone your way. If, you know, that first inning double in game one for Freeland, they don't get that. Could be a 1-0 win for your Rockies like they had in 2018 on the road against the Dodgers and teams like that when they were good. And so to me, these still feel more like your 17-18 Rockies, except, of course, that they lost. Though, remember, in 18, they lost plenty of frustrating one-run games as well. They just had 162 games scheduled to make up for it. So both of these teams are now 13-10, two more against each other here these next couple of days, back at Coors Field for the Rockies to try to get a little payback.
Yeah, you know, you might even say that because in 17 and 18 they went to the playoffs, so, you know, they won more of these kind of close games than they lost. You could almost say that this was a loss indicative of the 2016 Rockies, a team that, you know, just narrowly missed playing 500 baseball, 75 wins, so, you know, six games that kind of goes their way. They're at 500. They're a team, you know, again, comprised of a lot of these players as far as young guys go, but again, completely different in all other contexts. But just ultimately a team that wasn't ready yet and couldn't win those close ball games that you go, wow, I'm surprised they're in this game, and they lose it and you go, that's okay. they're going to get better. And they did in 17 and 18. And now is just the time where, yeah, they have all of the ability to win these games. You don't go in thinking they're definitely going to win this. They're definitely going to lose it. You got to tell us. And right now, in during this stretch, they're communicating that they're not entirely that team that we saw those first 2 weeks put away games like this and, you know, do it in a fashion that it got their run differential up to, you know, 23, I think, at its peak.
Yeah. Asiel, this is maybe the comment of the year, or at least I'm mad I didn't write this sentence before you did. It's hard because I think we have urgency bias, he says, but have to think of the big picture. 100%. You have to be urgent, but you also have to think of the big picture. And these are tough ones, but, you know, we may look back on them as blips in the road. We may look back on them as the beginning of the end. And so we'll see, but I don't think so because of the starting pitching. And that's really what it comes down to, is like, that's what makes it feel like 17 and 18 for me, because the starting pitching continues to be consistent, quality, and as long as that's the case, you know, you're going to win some of these. Nolan Arenado is going to get a big hit here and there. David Dahl is going to come out of his funk. Stuff like that's going to happen. And so I'm not overly – and as who was it that set up here earlier? And also, eight teams are going to make the playoffs. So while you may be concerned that the Colorado Rockies aren't going to win the division this year, when maybe they could have stolen it from the Dodgers, and they maybe could have, and they maybe still could, they're in a fine spot to be right there to play really anybody in a first-round playoff matchup. And if they're pitching like this, then all those games will be toss-ups too.
Yeah, precisely right. That was going to be my point, that there's eight teams, so you've got this wiggle room, and there isn't that sense of urgency where if you're playing for the wild card, you go, oh my gosh, each game is worth three times as much, and the impact on playoff odds and things of that nature. But with eight teams getting in, you go, okay, you can have a little bit of a lull right now and still be fine and rebound. And they're still in really good shape at three games over 500, at 565 winning percentage. So you just have to be a little bit weary of the Diamondbacks, who went into today, you know, with a five-game win streak. They're one of those teams. The Padres obviously aren't going away. And so it might seem crazy to think four teams from the West could make the playoffs, and maybe that'll be the case. But, you know, once they start playing a lot more of these, you know, interdivisional games here, the stretch coming up on Friday against the Dodgers in L.A., Diamondbacks, still a slew of games against the NOS. That's entirely what the month of September is. In fact, I'm not sure they play anybody else that's not in the NOS in the final month of the season. So, yeah, it's you don't have that same urgency. But, you know, once they sort it out a little bit, you're right, Drew, this idea that, you know, pitching wins ball games and pitching wins in the postseason. And right now, they've got that pitching. They're not losing because of that.
Right.
They're losing in spite of it in many ways. So that does get you excited and say, hey, when you get into the postseason, all bets are off. And that's why this game really isn't a game you look back on that much if you make the playoffs, because you go, well, if we would have won, then, all right, we would have faced the second best team in the NL, whatever those matchups. It doesn't matter at that point.
Right.
Doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is you're not the eighth seed and you're playing the Dodgers.
It might even be a weird, like, we might be in this situation, which we've never been in before, but like in the NBA, and now that I'm learning a little bit in the NHL, where when it gets down to the end of the season, there might be a team that's a little bit lower of a seed or whatever, a different matchup, where losing games is actually a good idea for you because you don't want to play whoever because you can't hit their starting pitcher. Now, of course, we have no idea, and you can't be playing that game now, but it's just funny to think that because of the shortness of the season, we're extra stressing over every single game. But because of the expanded playoffs and because of seeding and the way pitching matchups work, it may all end up not really being over much. You may end up as one of the lower seeds getting a much more friendly matchup to your team from for whatever reason. I'm trying to think of who the Rockies would match up really well again, but we'll save that conversation for another time. But you just don't know. And obviously you got to go out there and try to win every game that you can. And if you can keep pace with the Dodgers, do it. But stay in the playoff race and you'll be just fine.
So here's how about this for the math? All right, each game is worth three times as much. Okay. But because there's almost twice as many playoff teams, that means each game is only worth half as much. Three divided by two, 1.5. There we go. So each game itself is 50% more valuable than last year, or it's worth a game and a half. I think that's right.
Six to the – yeah.
Do you have your Scott Steiner calculator?
Yeah,
I because think Because if you punched it in, it'll be right.
Yeah, I think I followed all that. So. All right, that's all I got. That's all I know for today. Those are the things that I have become aware of on this day. We'll obviously keep right at it here for these next couple of games with the Houston Astros. The Rockies try to pull even with a couple at Coors Field. Make sure you're following us on social media for those at Drew Kreisman, at Patrick D. Lyons, at DNVR_Rockies. You got to subscribe to the DNVR.com so you don't miss out on any of that exclusive written content or any of the discounts on our merchandise, including this Larry Walker Hall of Fame shirt that I am currently rocking that you can see if you're watching on the live YouTube channel. All kinds of other cool stuff, including hats and masks and just cool DNVR Rocky stuff, or plenty of other sports teams if you're into the Nuggets, Broncos, Avs, all that stuff. They're having good seasons. It's been fun. So other than that, we know it was a rough one, but guess what? Baseball again tomorrow. So we'll see you then. Just continue to be absolutely awesome out there. We will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman and Patrick Lyons in here. And until next time, we'll see you at the ballpark.